The Senate Commerce and Consumer Protection Committee will come to order. I apologize for not announcing Room 15. It was on the agenda, but I think I should have said something at the earlier meeting. And I don't know if there's anybody in the audience here regarding Senate File 744, but we're not going to be taking that. That's been withdrawn from the agenda tonight. So we really have the Senate File 761 and 832, but Senators, they're the same bill. Senator Sparks will present Senate File 761, so we will be moving right along here. I don't know who heard. Senator Sparks, we're sure glad you could join us
here. Well, yeah, that's good.
Thank you, Madam Chairs and members, for the opportunity to present Senate File 761. This is a bill that really is a fairness issue, in my opinion. And I know that the hour is late. We want to hear from some of the experts. So I'm going to turn it over to Buzz Anderson to give you a little background. And then we do have a couple of motorsports dealers here that are going to testify and tell you a little bit about the bill.
Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. My name is Buzz Anderson. I'm president of the Retailers Association. And I will admit that I am an expert. By the definition of an old friend of mine who said an expert is broken down in two parts, X being a form or something and spur to drip under pressure. So by that, yeah.
Madam Chair, before we get going too quickly, actually we do have an author's amendment that would put the bill in the shape the author would like. The A2 amendment.
The A2, or we have the A1 as well. Is that yours?
I put it together. It's pretty technical.
Oh, okay. Oh, it's a technical amendment. So, okay, we'll do the A2 as an author's amendment. Members have it in their packet. Any discussion?
Aye.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The motion prevails. The amendment's adopted.
And then, Madam Chair, there is
cleans it up the bill.
An A1 technical amendment.
Which is technical.
Yeah.
Any discussion on the A1, members? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The amendment's adopted.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay.
Thank you. Sorry,
Mr. Anderson.
Madam Chair and members, thank you. I will try to be as brief as I can. I'll try not to get too wordy because I know everybody wants to get home. And I know that there are a number of witnesses that want to speak. Just for your information, the amendment that was offered essentially deletes portion Article 2 of the bill, which has to do with titling. There's a lot of people who feel very strongly that we should be titling all this equipment because of the cost, banks, insurance companies, all the rest. But the plain fact of the matter is it's also kind of a political hot potato. So I think it's something we need to talk about in the future. What we've done as a replacement for that is we've said that essentially under law now, if you buy a snowmobile or a boat and you go to register that, as you're required by law to do, they have to ask where you purchased the vehicle. If you purchase outside the state, they have to collect the sales tax. We're suggesting the same be done here for dirt bikes and ATVs, so that if you purchase it out of state, the deputy register merely has to tell you that you have to pay the sales tax. And it's one of the things that gets Senator Bach very excited about this bill.
Mr. Anderson, may I just interrupt you for a moment?
Yes.
Just to point out to members that this means that we really have just pages 1 through 9, I think, plus the amendment, or the two amendments, the technical and the sales tax payment language that was amended. So members can focus on that. I'm sorry.
That's fine. Thank you, ma'am. And certainly one of the things that a lot of members brought to my mind was the whole issue of titling, and I thank them for their candor in that because it helped us work through this. I also want to thank Senator Johnson for the work that she's done in this bill in the past, and thank Senator Sparks for agreeing to author this bill after meeting with some of my members in his district. Having said that, let me tell you why we're doing the bill. We're doing the bill because even though we're a free market organization, we believe that it's in the public interest, a compelling public interest for business relations between dealers and manufacturers to be fair. We also believe it's in the compelling public interest to protect dealers against unfair treatment by manufacturers who inherently have superior economic power and superior bargaining power. And thirdly, we think it's in compelling public interest because it gives dealers a remedy if they think they've been wronged. Now, you're going to probably hear some conflicting testimony today, so I would certainly ask you to feel free to call on my witnesses. They are very successful motorsports dealers in Minnesota, and they have got many years of experience in dealing with this issue. I would also say at the very beginning of this discussion that we are very pleased the manufacturer is here. We are delighted to have them in Minnesota. We think they make a tremendous economic impact. But we think that our dealers do as well. They hire more people than the manufacturers. There's 500 to 600 of them around Minnesota. They employ large numbers of people. They collect a large amount of property taxes. They invest a large amount of money employing a lot of people. They invest a great deal of money purchasing inventory, tools, signage, property, and building their showrooms the way that manufacturers want. So we're talking about very large expenditures on their part. And for that reason, we're offering this bill because it's become a great hardship for many of them, just like it has for manufacturers who have had to lay off people. You're going to hear from two of my witnesses who have both been in business for a very long time but have both laid off people for the first time ever. And these are people that they've known a long time and with whom they live in a community with. What the first part of the bill does is it defines what a motorsports equipment manufacturer is, what a equipment dealer is, what a dealership agreement is, and what termination and cancellation is all about. Then we do something very unique, and I think that you'll find that we do something quite different than Wisconsin. Although Wisconsin has a motorsports dealer protection law, as do many of the other surrounding states, this bill goes farther than that. We're pretty specific. We get very definitive about what we mean when we say that a manufacturer has the right to terminate a dealer, but for only good cause. We explain what good cause is. I might tell you Wisconsin law only has two reasons listed for as good cause, but the Wisconsin chapter also says that their statute will be interpreted very liberally. We're trying to get away from anybody interpreting anything. We're trying to be very specific in this bill in terms of what it means, what good cause means, so that if a manufacturer wants to terminate a dealer relationship, they have to use one of eight tests. Number one, there's been a major change in the business arrangement of the dealership without the consent of the manufacturer. Now, we're not cutting manufacturers out of this. The bill also says they can't unreasonably withhold their consent, but they're certainly given the opportunity to say that they object to the change in business arrangement. Number two, there's been a bankruptcy filing. On that basis, you can terminate the dealership. Three, there's been a change in the location of the dealer's principal place of business, again, without the consent of the manufacturer. Again, we're bringing the manufacturer into this because we think they're very important. Number four, the dealer's defaulted on a mortgage with the manufacturer. Number six, the dealer's pleaded guilty or been convicted of a felony affecting the business relationship between the dealer and the manufacturer. We actually added an amendment in the House, which we'd be glad to entertain here. I just don't have the language, because we met with the manufacturers, and the manufacturer said, you mean to tell me that if a dealer commits a felony or fraud against us, we have to buy back their equipment? We said, that's a good point. So we've actually exempted them from that requirement in the House, and we would be glad to entertain that in this body as well if the bill continues to move. Number seven, the dealers engaged in conduct which is injurious to the dealer's customer or to the public welfare. And number eight, the dealer fails to meet reasonable market penetration requirements based on the manufacturer's experience in other comparable marketing areas. We're not saying that the manufacturers can't make demands on the dealers for market penetration. We're just saying they have to be reasonable. Now, I think you're going to, when my witnesses get up here, our witnesses get up here, you're going to see that they are very successful people and they've been in business a long time. What you might be led to believe is that we're just doing this to try to save marginal dealers. That is not the case. This is for all dealers in Minnesota of all sizes and shapes. And we're not just talking about trying to save marginal dealers. We don't want bad dealers to be in business in this state because bad dealers hurt the brand name that the other dealers sell. And if they cause harm to that brand name, it only hurts the other dealers. So we want the manufacturers to be able to take other dealers out of the trade area if, in fact, they have good cause, as we just defined in the bill. Now, what the bill also requires is that you give notice. If you're going to terminate a dealership, you have to give a 90-day notice, and then the dealer has 60 days to remedy whatever the problem is. If they haven't, then there's an obligation on the manufacturer to repurchase the unused outdoor sports equipment in new condition that's been purchased within the last 24 months. This is very common in other states, as is the case in Wisconsin, Iowa, and South Dakota. In addition to that, they're required to purchase repair parts in Subdivision 3, and there's a formula laid out there for how those parts need to be paid for. One of the more interesting things about this part, too, is that it does require that manufacturers, if their software that they use for diagnostics or for dealing with the manufacturer are less than 5 years old, they have to pay back 20% a year, which depreciates over a 5-year period. So that if the software is 4 years old, they have to pay 20% of what the net cost was. There's requirements for payment of interest. There's a requirement that dealers actually provide an interest, a notice that they intend to return product. There's an opportunity for manufacturers to do inspection. There's payment and credit requirements on both. There's also a provision that says that if someone dies in the dealership, if the dealer dies, that the heirs can either keep the business if they choose to do so, again, with the consent of the manufacturer, or they can require the manufacturer to purchase the dealership, the parts, and so on. Now, the bill also talks about what kind of things are violations. For example, it's a violation for a manufacturer to say to a dealer that you have to buy a certain amount of equipment or I'm going to take away your dealership. It's also a violation for the manufacturer to coerce a dealer into refusal to purchase equipment that's manufactured by another equipment manufacturer. So you can be a multi-line dealer if you so choose. Most of these dealers are multi-line dealers and have been for a long time. There's also a provision that talks about warranties, that you have to pay people for their warranty work based on what your effective formula rate is for doing warranty work. And it has to be expressed in hours and the time required to complete the work. There's also provision that allows for compensation of expenses, compensation of parts, gives manufacturers an opportunity to adjust for errors. There's alternate terms and conditions also provided in the bill. This provides a civil remedy so that if a dealer is put upon by a manufacturer unfairly, they can actually have a remedy in a competent court of jurisdiction, and the applicability begins August 1, 2007. Madam Chair, if it's okay with you, I would like to ask our witnesses to come forth. They've traveled quite a distance, and they've been here all day from Baxter and Hutchinson. So, Mr. Vandeputty and Mr. Weir, if you'd come to the table, I'd appreciate it.
Mr. Anderson, if I might ask you a question. Did you address, it's on, well, you're down there. It's not fair to give you the citation here. On page 5, subdivision 6, it starts at 5.3. The notice of intent to return, did you just go over that while I? I was just trying to figure out what it means, what it's about.
Oh, this is just simply saying that the outdoor motorsports equipment dealer, which also includes people who sell ATVs, snowmobiles, and marines and marine equipment and so on, have an obligation to give a notice of intent to return.
So it's a notice of intent to return in lieu of returning it. That's what I'm not understanding.
I guess you got me on that one. If you wouldn't mind, Madam Chair, could we call on our witnesses and
let me
look
absolutely
at that for a minute, and
okay,
then I'll try to respond.
Try to figure that out. Welcome to our committee.
Thank you.
Welcome to the Capitol. So if you'll just identify yourself and then feel free to just speak.
My name is Bob Weir, and I'll be speaking first. I'm from Hutchinson, Minnesota.
Is your last name Weir?
That's correct.
Like W-E-I-R?
W-I-E-H-R, silent H.
Okay. Mr. Weir, yes, thank you.
Steve Van Putty from Minnesota.
Your last name is?
V-A-N-D-E-U-T-T-E.
Okay. Yes, feel free to go ahead. And
Madam Chairman and committee members, I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to address you today. My son and I own two motorsports and marine dealerships in Minnesota. We carry six boat lines and two motorsports lines. We own two stores. We have approximately $3.5 to $4 million in gross sales per year and pay the wages for 15 employees per year. We have been in business approximately 11 years. I don't think the manufacturers can categorize us as being another disgruntled, non-performing dealer. And I'm going to leave my pre-canned text for a second and tell you a little bit about myself as a dealer. We must be doing okay because we're one of the oldest Yamaha motorsports dealers in the state. We've been ranked one or two in the last three, 4 years for market share in our county. We're the oldest Yamaha G3 boat dealer in the state. We're the second oldest Yamaha Skeeter boat dealer in the state, and we're ranked fourth or fifth out of a five-state area. We're the third largest dealer in Yamaha personal watercraft in the state of Minnesota, fifth in Minnesota and Wisconsin. Just in the last 6 months, we've been solicited by two of their boat lines because of our success to come and take on their lines, which we did. So we feel we've been doing very well. Our customer satisfaction indexes are well above the national average. What we're looking for as dealers is for fairness in business and parity with the manufacturers. We don't want a free ride. Although we have had a good relationship with the manufacturers over those years, our partnership is not equal. Wisconsin dealers, I think that's the right direction, could be wrong, they have this parity. The Iowa dealers have this parity. The South Dakota dealers have this parity. And in fact, our own Minnesota legislature gave this protection to the car dealerships, and you gave it to the implement dealers in the state of Minnesota. This protection is long overdue for the motorsports and marine dealers in Minnesota, and unfortunately, too late for many. Without any dealer protection, the Minnesota dealers have become warehouses for the manufacturers and indirectly their capital reserves. They are driving our business more than we are. And unfortunately, at the expense of myself, my family, and our employees. The short and long-term capital investment in this business, it's not a backyard business. It's huge, absolutely huge now. Times have changed. And we have all kinds of personal guarantees and promises that we have to make and financial commitments. If the manufacturers sincerely want to have dealers as true partners, I believe they should have long-term agreements instead of actual annual contracts. Currently today, we have annual contracts. You cannot build a dealership in 1 year. You cannot train technicians in 1 year. It takes up to 5 years to train a good mechanic. You cannot recover your investments in 1 year. The overhead is way, way too great. I believe the manufacturers have good people working for them, but it's too easy to exploit dealers in Minnesota. This needs to change. Please help us, like you did for the car dealers and the implement dealers in Minnesota. Another dealer wrote with me with this meeting, Butch Hosladen. He's a competitor of mine. We rode together, attesting to the importance of this bill to all the dealers. In fact, there are several dealers today, five. In fact, they're some of the best dealers in the state. The numbers they put up, some of these dealers, is tremendous. We do not want low-performing dealers in our profession. We want them to go away, and we think this bill and what we're trying to do here will help the manufacturers and help us accomplish that. And unfortunately, the Butch, who I just alluded to a few minutes ago, he lost his retirement savings and is still paying today for his past relationship with the motorsports manufacturer. And unbelievable as it may sound, he might have to go through that again with his marine dealer twice. As his competitor for years, I truly believe the situation had nothing to do with his management abilities. He was forced out of business because he could not afford to do business the way manufacturers are allowed to do business in this state. Last year, our dealership was ranked third in Minnesota and fifth out of 44 Minnesota and Wisconsin combined dealers in the sale of a manufacturer's watercraft. In light of this ranking, our reviews from the manufacturer state that we are not contractually compliant and are not meeting our market share numbers. This year, we ordered 110% of what the manufacturer said we should order. However, the manufacturer physically could not build these units and therefore canceled several of our units. In addition, he moved back the delivery of several of those units. Although the manufacturer cannot produce all the units, it is beyond belief, and I think rather hypocritical, that our own unit target, our target that they set, has not been changed, and I can't meet it because they can't build the units. Still, our reviews reflect that we are non-current in market share, yet we are the third largest dealer in Minnesota. What's also interesting and a point of contention with us is that we are not evaluated by the demographics around Hutchinson, where I live, like most manufacturers. But we are evaluated by this particular manufacturer around Minneapolis, which is 60 to 80 miles away from us. Also, it is interesting that we don't have a yearly contract agreement, and we haven't had one with this manufacturer for 8 months. In July, we ordered watercraft. We got watercraft being delivered, and we have no signed, it's already March, we have no signed yearly addendum. We sign them blank, and that's the way they do them. We sign them, send them in. Sometimes we get them back. Sometimes we don't get them back. And I haven't got mine back yet. Okay? This is not unusual to sign yearly contracts that we may or may not see.
Mr. Weir, can you just a moment? Senator Johnson wanted to ask a question.
I'm really sorry to interrupt you, Madam Chair, Mr. Weir, but on that issue right there, when you are going from year to year in your business, without that contract that you don't really know if you have or not, do you feel that you're still a dealer? Do you feel like there's some precarious ground you're standing on?
Yeah, our investment is so high that we feel at any time our dealership could be pulled, and we're just in limbo status. And we want to sell the manufactured product. We're doing a great job, but I think it's totally unfair that we only get addendums yearly, and then we only get them sometimes.
Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Senator Sparks and Mr. Anderson, does the bill address that issue directly?
Mr. Anderson, does it deal with?
Madam Chair and Senator Johnson, it does address the bill directly because, in fact, what happens in this bill is that you have an ongoing relationship with through this bill with the manufacturer, which can only be terminated by the causes that are listed in the bill. Otherwise, it's a year-to-year deal, and you may not know. Now, Mr. Vanderputty hasn't spoke yet. We'll tell you, he's been in this business for 45 years. He had a dealership for a brand for 17 years, and it was pulled.
Senator
Johnson, and I think on page 2, in section 2, where it's talking about terminations or cancellations, fail to renew is one of the
And
things.
I think that's the one of the hearts of this, and that's why I wanted to stop. Go on.
I appreciate that question because it is a very important part of what we're trying to do.
And Mr. Weir, you can continue here.
Thank you very much, Madam Chairman. The message here is the motorsports and marine manufacturers can do pretty much whatever they want to do because they are unwilling to put in place long-term contracts and agreements and will only do these annexes. Hopefully this committee agrees and passes this bill in the committee. This bill is more crucial to pass this year because the motorsports and marine industry is currently down 35% and 40% this year in Minnesota. Most of the dealers' reserves are gone. And with inventory levels extremely high, most dealers' credit lines are maxed, and yet the manufacturers are asking the dealers basically to bail them out. And in some cases, there is enough product built that if all the manufacturers would stop building today, all of them together, if they stop building today in some of the product lines, it would take 2 years to clean out the pipeline. The dealers didn't create this situation. The manufacturers did. All the manufacturers have moved up unit deliveries. They have moved up their unit deliveries to affect their cash flow. This has the opposite effect on us. They move up deliveries, they need the cash flow. What it affects us, we get units before we need them, we pay interest on those units, and we turn around and pay that interest, that high interest, back to the dealer, to the manufacturers. So what's good for them is bad for us.
At least in this case,
in
right?
This case, yeah. Okay. In this case. We want our management skills and hard work to determine our financial future, not the manufacturer's management style. In closing, remember, the precedence has already been set in this legislature. The car dealers and the implement dealers in Minnesota already have this protection. I believe in equality and spent 20 years in the military supporting that philosophy. If it's right for them, how can it not be right for us? All the surrounding states have made the call already, providing the protection for motorsports and marine dealers. Okay, I'm going to leave my text a little bit here and address a couple issues. It is important to note, and we need the manufacturers. And I think so far, I've been here all day, and we've talked to the manufacturers. Some of them gave testimony already. And there's a few manufacturers here. But there's a whole bunch of manufacturers that are not here. The biggest share is not here. And in fact, some of them that are here deal with snowmobiling. And I want to make sure this is clear. Snowmobiling has really gone down in the last 5 years. This dealership, 40 years, myself, we do not sell very many more snowmobiles anymore. That's a small part of our business. It is motorcycles, ATVs, personal watercraft, boats. That's where our majority of our business. That is, snowmobiles has almost become a token. And it was nice to get all this snow so we could move some snowmobiles. But snowmobiling is not a big part of the motorsports and marine businesses anymore.
Mr. Weir, if I may interrupt, is that because of the lack of snow we've
yes,
had here?
Yes, that is the primary cause of that.
Madam Chair.
Senator Johnson.
Mr. Weir, were you still required to bring in snowmobiles even with the lack
correct.
Of snow?
That's correct. I put up a
Mr.
new
Weir.
Store, in fact, and we had a contractual agreement with the manufacturer. They couldn't give us a dealer number because if you give you a dealer number, put up a new building, and you couldn't give us a dealer number. If they gave us a dealer number, all the product would have arrived in an empty lot. So we had a contractual agreement that we're the guys, we're putting up a building for you. Motorcycles, ATV is the biggest part. Well, building's up, and then they says, okay, before we give you your dealer number, how many snowmobiles you order? We ordered more snowmobiles than all the dealers in the whole state of South Dakota.
Madam Chair.
That was our requirement.
Mr. Weir.
Senator Johnson.
Yes, ma'am.
How many did you order? Do you know
on the
Mr. Weir.
I can't remember how many order. At this time, I know I have like 25, 30 snowmobiles left.
And Mr. Weir,
Senator Johnson.
How many did you know as an experienced dealer you were
going to sell? Mr. Weir.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. The answer to that question, I would say, given the snowmobile years and in the area and the demographics around Hutchinson, that a number of 15 would probably have been reasonable.
Did you say 15?
15.
15.
And Madam Chair.
Senator Johnson.
So for sure you were going to have 15 holdovers?
Yes.
Sure.
Okay.
And then.
Mr. Weir, you can continue.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. And what's really interesting is in the personal watercraft, since we're on that issue there, I'll highlight this. One of the manufacturers, we had 3 years ago, we ordered personal watercraft heavily because we were cleaned out. It got cold in Minnesota, and they had on the news. Nobody's in there. They're not even swimming. We had carryovers. So we ordered what we thought was reasonable, a smaller number. We almost got terminated for doing that. And then when we went to the dealer meeting, we were ranked 32 out of 62 dealers in Minnesota and Wisconsin, and we didn't get one watercraft delivered to us. We were ranked 32 just with all the carryovers. Okay. And also I wanted to point out that I know that a manufacturer's here, and one of the manufacturers, and I told you the impact in snowmobiling a little bit in Minnesota in the last 5 years and how it affects our dealerships and how much of the business is in the snowmobiling. In fact, some manufacturers are realigning realigning into ATVs and realigning into bikes. And I do believe one of those manufacturers is Polaris. They're reallocating, put more emphasis, especially in their Victory bikes, and in more emphasis in their ATVs, and at least on the internet and other correspondence, I believe that they're walking a little ways away from the snowmobile industry. Well, that particular manufacturer is bound today by motorcycles and has, I mean, they're bound by these guidelines that we're trying to pass for the motorsports and the boat dealers now. The motorcycle dealers have that protection under the car laws, okay? And Polaris sells bikes, motorcycles. Well, they're already under those guidelines already, and most of them are aligned and almost identical with what we have in this current bill. And I have one more comment, and I'll be closing here if I may. I've heard that there has not been any termination of dealers, and it's just really amazing to me. I just sat down and wrote down the dealers that I know have been terminated, me personally, that I can name, and I know there's a lot more. There's 7 dealers I know of have been terminated in the last year by the manufacturers. Actually terminated. One of the dealers back here, he actually has been a 40-year dealer. He was a 40-year dealer. He was in the top 10 or 20, I think for 30 years. And he found out that he was terminated through everybody else. The manufacturers didn't even tell him. He found out from everybody else. So this is a law that is sorely needed. We've got some of the other businesses in Minnesota have that protection. We've got it in the states around us. And I'd appreciate helping us out. And hopefully today will be the first step forward for the Minnesota dealers to give us some protection.
Mr. Weir, thank you for your testimony. Mr. Vandiputi, do you?
Once again, thank you for taking the time to hear us out. You're going to hear from the manufacturers how they've never terminated anybody, or if they have, it was a self-termination, or it's very rare. They were asked how many dealers they've terminated. The response was about 4. All I can tell you is I was terminated. They're not going to use the word terminated. They're going to use the word voluntary termination. They're going to use the word non-renewal. They can phrase it any way they want. They're going to sugarcoat a whole bunch of things here for you in a few minutes.
And they'll have an opportunity.
Yes,
for
they
sure
will.
And
I didn't take much
side.
Of an opportunity over at the house to talk, but I'm going to take some time. They took plenty of my time. I'm not vindictive against the manufacturer. I need them. I love this industry. I've snowmobiled since I was 5 years old. I'm a snowmobile dealer because I love the sport, not because I make any money. I'd like you to ask one of the manufacturers how much their CEO made last year. That would be interesting because they're going to tell you how much money they're losing. And if they do not defeat this bill, in other words, this bill passes, they're going to tell you how they're going to go broke, how they're going to lay a bunch of people off in the state of Minnesota. I want you to ask them, do they charge more for their units in Texas, South Dakota, Iowa, Wisconsin? How do they survive? All these other states, 37 out of 50 states, have dealer protection. You've got two manufacturers in this state that are taking advantage of their political clout in this state to bypass a dealer protection law so they can make this their warehouse. It's got to come to an end. I have not been in the business for 45 years. I'm only 45 years old.
I was wondering how you could have been. But
thank you. My grandfather started a Volkswagen dealership in Brainerd, Minnesota in 1959. He's still alive. He's 91 years old. The franchise is still in his name. I don't believe there's a Volkswagen dealer in the United States that's been in business longer than he has. Yet these manufacturers are going to sit and tell you that I'm a bad dealer. They're going to say the only dealers that want this law is bad dealers that are looking for a way out. Does a family business for 45 years look like a dealer that wants a way out? I've been in the power sports business since 1989. I've got accolades on my wall till hell won't have it. They don't pay the bills. I've got CSI ratings better than the national average. I track this stuff. I have 40 employees. I'm a $16 million a year business. I'm not some fly-by-night chainsaw dealership. And I've got facts and $10,000 in attorney fees that'll back up that they do not renew dealers if they can find somebody better. Nobody asked me if I ever declared bankruptcy. Nobody asked me why I wasn't renewed. Nobody asked me, do I pay my bills? They'll sit and tell you, well, we pay for half their sign. Where does half the money come from? Co-op is paid for by the dealer. You order a snowmobile, it's $5,000, 2% is built in. All they're doing is giving us our money back. They try and make it look like they're paying half the bill. Don't listen to it. Excuse me, but I'm very passionate about this business. Some of these people here tonight to speak on behalf of the manufacturer, they're just hired guns. They don't have their investment in this. This is my life. I put this whole thing into this. This is supposed to be what my family can fall back on. I've invested millions of dollars in this. For a one-year dealer agreement, they're going to say, well, why did Steve enter in this agreement in the first place? When 1992, when we signed him up, he knew it was only a one-year dealer agreement. Things have changed. Real estate is up, taxes is up, they've added three or four product lines, they have to abide by them. If you're a motorcycle dealer, you have to abide by this, so why can't they abide by it with their other product lines? And I'm truly offended by the fact that I was called a poor dealer today. These guys don't even know me. They're going to tell you how they got 1,500 employees in this state. I can tell you right now there's at least 400 power sports dealers without marine. Add those up, times 10 employees. I've got 40. I think we employ a few more people than the manufacturers. They're going to tell you how they had to lay some people off, and that if this bill passes, they're going to have to lay more people off. It's not my fault. I didn't make it not snow. I'm in the same boat. Four of my people got laid off, first time in 45 years. That's 10% of my, or excuse me, that's four out of my 40 is nowhere near what their percentage is on their 1,500. And I'd like you to ask me some questions. I was hoping that because I think I've got some expertise in this business, that I've been around, I've dealt with this my whole adult life, that I think I know what's fair, and I don't think anything we're asking for is unfair. We're just asking for a fair level playing field. If they can do it in every state around us, they can do it for us. It's just a way for them to get out. Bury us with inventory, then when they don't want us and somebody else comes along. Wish it was that easy just to dump some of the other commitments in my life, but I made a commitment to them. I stuck to it. I did everything. The only thing I didn't do is go and spend $2.5 million up on Highway 371 and put up a Taj Mahal business for them and get them 50% market share, which is unrealistic. They also told me the numbers don't lie, Steve. There was 90-some Polaris snowmobiles sold in Crow Wing County last year, and you only sold approximately 58 of them. So customers aren't happy with you. They're going and buying their snowmobiles from other dealers. I said, I'd like to see that list. The first 28 units on the list went directly from the factory to Craigan's Resort for rentals. They bypassed the dealer. They're going to tell you, we don't sell anything without the dealer. Never. We need our dealer. It's against our policy. I can assure you, I can prove to you that they do. They don't abide by the rules. And if you have any questions, I'd certainly be willing to answer them. Once again, I'm sorry if I got a little passionate, but this is my life. It's been everything to me, and I've got everything invested in it, and I don't want to lose it based on a one-year dealer agreement.
Now, Mr. Vandiputi, I think that everyone on this committee has enormous respect for people who put themselves on the line and operate a business and a small business. It's the lifeblood of our state economy, and we appreciate and respect what you do. So, no, you have every right to come here and tell us your story. Senator Johnson, did you have a question?
Madam Chair, you really kind of summed it up, but I do want to say something. No, don't apologize. I want to say something directly. Mr. Vanderby?
Close enough.
I want to tell you tell you that my family had a 35-year very profitable retail hardware until a snowmobile, which we love, hit our sales floor. $250,000 down the drain. No more business. 35 employees gone as of August. It'll happen to you. If you hang on to those make-believe contracts and ties, it will happen.
So
I've seen it happen.
In our, yes, Senator Olson?
thank you, Madam Chair. And I would also very much appreciate Mr. Vandeputty's testimony and the testimony of the other witnesses. Mr. Vandeputty took the time. He lives just south of my district, and many of the dealers who are being affected are in my district. And I'm very sympathetic to the problems that you're facing. But I've been reading this bill, and I just have some questions, because when we met, the way you laid it out for me, and reading this language, I guess, from the perspective of a lawyer, I'm not sure that I quite understand, and I just want to make sure I have a good understanding of what you're doing here. And I'm looking at comparing between pages 2 and 3. When you talk about good cause, which begins in section 2, it says... Am I understanding correctly, and if I'm not, I would like someone to tell me if I'm not understanding this correctly, that, first of all, there won't be any termination of any agreement unless there has been good cause, even in situations where the vehicles are being repurchased by the manufacturer, because that's the way I'm reading this. So I just want to make sure that that's your intent, or maybe someone will correct me if I'm not reading this correctly. So that in a situation, for example, where the dealer were to violate a contract for whatever, you know, some type of breach of contract, there'd still be a requirement for the dealers or for the manufacturer to repurchase the four-wheelers under those, or the snowmobile or whatever it might be under those circumstances. So I'm just kind of going back and forth and trying to understand. You've got 7 specific or 8 specific reasons when good cause is automatically going to exist. And in those situations, as well as any other situation, they would have to state the reason that would constitute good cause. And then you'd have an opportunity to cure. And then they'd have to repurchase the equipment if you do go ahead with the termination of the agreement. Is that what you're intending?
Mr. Anderson?
Madam Chair and Senator Olson, again, what we're trying to do is delineate as carefully as we can what good cause means. And in the House tonight, and again, I didn't have a chance to bring the language with me, we think the manufacturer's raised a good point, that if you as a dealer commit fraud against the manufacturer, why should the manufacturer have to be in a position to buy back your equipment if you committed fraud? So we've actually revised that in the House, or at least attempted to revise that. And I'd be happy if the bill continues to include that in this version too, because we think that that's important. But again, the idea is that if the manufacturer has good cause, they have to let you know 90 days before they intend to terminate you. And then you have 60 days to correct whatever the problem is. And so, again, that's the intent. And then if you haven't corrected the problem, then they have an obligation to buy back your equipment. They have the obligation to buy back your parts. They have the obligation to buy back your special tools and your diagnostic equipment and your software based on how old it is. And your parts based on how old they are. Again, formulas are set in the bill to do that. If the numbers aren't quite right, we are open to working with manufacturers to make those numbers correct. But again, we're trying to take a stab at what we think is fair to both parties.
So, Senator Olson. So Madam Chair, so then an example of a situation where you were in breach, in violation of a contract agreement. I mean, it isn't always fraud. Sometimes in any situation where you have a contract, if one party fails to perform over something that might be intentional on your part, even if it's not fraudulent, they would still have to buy back equipment under those circumstances? Is that the intent of this bill?
My
Mr. Anderson?
Understanding,
Who is Mr. Vandaputa? Yes.
Yeah. My understanding, Ms. Olson, or Senator Olson, excuse me, is yes. I would not be opposed to, if they want me to reach a certain market share and I don't obtain it, they have the right to terminate me. But when they do terminate me, all I'm asking is that they buy the product back.
And Madam Chair.
Senator Olson.
And I think that's a very good point, Mr. Vandaputty. I'm just wondering if we should distinguish between something that's not within your control, like reaching a certain percentage of market share, and something where there's a deliberate breach, that there are lots of different components to a contract, and if there's a violation of contract agreement because you, let's say, for example, let's say you move your business and you agree you're going to put it in a certain place and you decide to move the business, and they give you an opportunity to cure that, or in, you have 60 days and you decide not to do that. Under this bill, it looks as though they'd then still have to come back in and buy your equipment back from you. Is that your intent?
That's correct, Senator Olson. Okay. Now, if we're convicted of a felony or plead guilty to a felony, then no, they don't have to. If I would, for example, to be caught doing fraudulent warranty claims or selling units out of trust or violating any law that would be against the manufacturer, then no, they don't have to buy the product back.
Okay. Madam Chair.
Senator Olson, I just want to clarify, I don't want to interrupt you. It's my understanding that that's the way the House language reads right now, right? That's not what
Madam Chair and Senator Olson, the House version, as I understand it, just having looked at the amendment that was written by House counsel by hand and presented to the committee, essentially said that if the dealer commits fraud against the manufacturer, no longer does the obligation exist on the manufacturer to buy back the parts. Now, I don't think any dealer wants to sanction any bill that would allow for willful misconduct against a manufacturer, with the obligation then being on the manufacturer to buy back the parts. I shook hands with one of the manufacturers before I left and said, let's keep talking.
Okay.
If we move ahead, I'd like to make sure that that doesn't happen.
And Senator Olson, I think this bill will end up at judiciary as well, but that doesn't mean it's certainly valid for us to talk about here. So I didn't want to interrupt you, but I wanted to make it clear that it isn't in here.
Right. Like, and Madam Chair, I think I just wanted to make the point to make sure I was understanding that I think the way this is written here, even when you have one of these eight exceptions that it would are eight reasons that state to be good cause, there's still an obligation on the part of the manufacturer to buy back the equipment, and I just wanted to make sure that was your intent.
Okay. Mr. Weir? Madam Chair, I'd like to address Senator Olson's comment there. The situation that you're highlighting is probably going to – the chances of something like that happening is probably going to be very slim. But I'm glad you brought it up, because there were several dealers in Minnesota. They were Lund and Crestliner dealers. They came in and they wiped out all the dealerships and said, you're taking away your Crestliner dealership, we're taking away your Lund dealership, and we're going to give it to one dealer in the cities for each brand. And in that case, which this is really headed for, and what this bill provides, the manufacturer for all of those Minneapolis dealers would have had to go back in and give them compensation, take their old parts or old inventory. And that is really what the bill, I mean, that's what's going to be addressed the biggest in this bill, stuff like that.
Senator Olson.
Okay, and Madam Chair, and I'm totally in agreement with you under those circumstances. I guess what I question is when you have good cause, and you've delineated here what would be a reason for the manufacturer to terminate because of it would be good cause, because of something that a dealer has done wrong, like a felony conviction or so forth, and you list what those are. Even in those circumstances, you're still putting the responsibility on the manufacturer to come back in and purchase the equipment, which I think was different than what I had heard how this bill was explained to me initially. But I just wanted to make sure that I understood that.
Thanks for asking.
Any other questions? Okay.
Madam Chair.
Mr. Anderson.
I wonder if I couldn't respond to the question you asked earlier.
Okay.
You know, there's a lot of moving parts in here, and again, we've talked to people in other parts of the country, and we've tried to build as much specificity into this bill as possible, as did Senator Johnson when she originally drafted the bill with Senator Perso and others. But what this notice of intent to return is to try to provide the flexibility such that if you have a lot of equipment or if you have large equipment that may not necessarily you want to send back to the manufacturer or they don't want sent back, that you can list a notice of intention to return and then a process is set in place so that they can inspect it and verify it. And it may be sent somewhere else. It might be sent to an adjoining community instead of all the way back to the manufacturer. Now, if that isn't the right way to do it, we can certainly change the verbiage, but that's the intent.
No, I hadn't thought through that would be a possibility or those would be possibilities, so I understand now. You're talking about the notice section that I questioned.
Right, exactly. Yes,
on page 3. Yeah. Any other questions? Do you have any other witnesses? Senator Sparks.
You know, we don't. I just want to make one other point. I know that Mr. Vanderputty is a very passionate man, and I consider him a very good friend, and I know he's a very successful business person, and everything he said is true. But I don't want you to think that we don't want to have an open door to the manufacturers. We want to work out something that encourages our members to want to make sure there's successful manufacturers in Minnesota. We want them to be concerned about us, too. So if they do something to Mr. Vanderputty that's going to cause him to no longer be a dealer after 17 years, that they know that there now is an obligation on them to help remedy that problem that they, in fact, have helped create. So our door is open. We want to continue to work with them, and I suspect that we will.
Okay, thank you. Gentlemen, thank you very much. You're going to stay for a bit, or are you going to?
No.
Okay.
Thank you, ma'am.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Weir, Mr. Vanderputty. I know that there are people to represent another point of view. Would they like to come forward? And I don't want to do bad things to your name. So I may let you introduce yourselves, and then I'll try to remember that. So go ahead, feel free to go ahead and introduce yourself and then give your testimony and pass it to the next person. If that's
Madam Chair, Senators, it's a Norwegian name. My name is Rick Stokey.
Stokey?
Yes.
Okay.
And I understand that this issue is steeped in emotion, and in no way with any of the statements that I made prior was I attempting to malign the reputation of the dealers that are sitting behind me. But the fact remains there is a wide range of dealers operating in the state. I'm not a hired gun. I was born in Thief River Falls. I've been employed by the company for 16 years. I've been involved in the product all my life. Most of my family work for this company. So this is a very serious concern for all of us, not just the dealers, but the manufacturers as well. These are people too. I'm a regional sales manager for Arctic Cat Sales. Arctic Cat is based in Thief River Falls with an additional manufacturing facility in St. Cloud. This legislation impacts not only Arctic Cat, but would also impact all manufacturers of outdoor motorsports equipment. It is especially troubling for us Minnesota-based manufacturers. Our state is home to nationally and internationally significant makers of boats, snowmobiles, ATVs, utility vehicles, and motorcycles, and we employ thousands of people throughout greater Minnesota and support suppliers and vendors in the state that employ thousands more. So it's not just the manufacturers. It's everyone who supplies parts to us in towns like Bagley, Minnesota, and St. Cloud. These are challenging times, not only for our dealers, but for our other partners and ourselves. And, of course, several of us, as we had said in earlier testimony, have had to go through the pain of laying off people. In fact, I had to lay off people in my department, so I understand completely how the dealers feel. We employ around 1,500 people in Minnesota. We make snowmobiles, ATVs, and utility vehicles. Arctic Cat products are distributed throughout the United States by over 1,100 independent dealers. These dealers usually carry more than just ATVs or snowmobiles. They can be lumber yards, hardware stores, lawn and garden shops, the large dealer, albeit has become more commonplace, is still somewhat of the exception. And these dealerships are not like car dealerships. Under those kinds of laws, a car dealership would be required in some cases to carry only one brand and upkeep a facility in a particular fashion. And you can see that with Motorworks, BMW, and other facilities around town. Many of these dealers carry multiple competing brands of products, including products from companies like Honda, Yamaha, Kawasaki, and Suzuki. Our ATV business currently faces increasing competition from companies located in Taiwan, China, and other Asian countries, most of which don't conform or certify to minimal safety requirements. The snowmobile and ATV markets are highly competitive based on a number of factors, including brand loyalty, price, and distribution. As a result, our dealer network and our relationships with our dealers are of critical importance to the ongoing well-being of our company. Dealers are the only way we retail our product. Because our products require pre-delivery setup and after-sale service, we need a strong dealer between us as the manufacturer and our mutual customer. Financially strong, profitable, good business people will run their businesses in a way that gives consumers the shopping and service experience they are looking for, and consequently are the best way for us to get our products to consumers. The better our dealers are and the better our relationship is with those dealers, the better service we can offer the customer. Each year, we enter into written agreements with our dealers. Under those agreements, Arctocat generally is obligated to give each dealer written notice of performance issues and 60 days in which to correct those issues. We also make considerable investments in our dealers with our cooperative advertising program. We pay up to 60% of the dealer's advertising costs, and the dealers can say they've earned that money, but the fact remains we spend millions of dollars of our funding out of our annual budget to cover those advertising costs. With our floor plan assistance program, we pay most of the bank interest for our products, which those dealers own. With our world-class store program, we pay a portion of the dealer's store remodeling costs. Additionally, when it comes to the dealer sign, the dealer is eligible for reimbursement of 50% of that cost through the cooperative advertising program, which again is real money. Upon termination by either the dealer or Arctocat, we pay for the remaining $200 that pays for the sign faces, and we take those back, and the dealer gets to keep the sign box and use that for other brands if he so chooses. In the last 10 years, Arctocat has not terminated or not renewed a single Minnesota dealer. Throughout the country, we have rarely terminated a dealer. Yet under our existing dealer agreement, a dealer can cease doing business with us for any reason or no reason, and they only need give us 30 days notice to do so. On the other hand, we can't do the same thing without significant financial consequences. When it comes to product orders, dealers make their own decisions about the size of the order they want to make. There are no threats made. We recognize that some dealers have inventory issues, especially on the snowmobile side of our business. During the last 10 years, we have had one normal snowfall across North America, and the industry has been adjusting to the resulting market realities. Like most industries, dealers order their product months before retail sales begin. Like most industries, sales forecasts are made that may or may not turn out to be accurate, but forced repurchase of old inventory by government intervention is wrong. I have had personal experience with mandatory repurchase requirements. In those situations, I have seen dealers abuse the system and return worn and used items such as used ATV tires. Recently, we had a return of ATVs where each ATV was missing its battery and some other parts. The business cost to Arctocat to deal with such conduct is huge. Such a provision in law would be harmful to Arctocat, its employees, and its shareholders. We design, engineer, manufacture, and nationally advertise our products and then rely totally on our dealer partners to sell at retail. If they do a poor job, we're out of business. The ability to have a strong and responsive dealer system is crucial to meet the needs of our customers. When you think about it, manufacturers are held hostage to the performance of our dealers. If our dealers don't perform, we can't sell our products to the consumer. And again, we have no alternative way of selling to that customer. We know that overall satisfaction with our product and the customer's intent to repurchase is directly tied to the experience the customer has at the dealership. We believe these types of laws get in the way of good business relationships between dealers and manufacturers. We respectfully ask that you vote against SF 761. This vote is important for Minnesota jobs, Minnesota shareholders, and Minnesota outdoor enthusiasts who rely on Arctic Cat products and good Arctic Cat dealers for service. Thank you, Madam Chair and Senators.
Mr. Stokey, do you deal with laws in other states that are similar to what's being asked for us to do here tonight?
Yes.
And so you do have those repurchase provisions and...
We do.
And the good cause termination, okay.
Yes.
Okay. I wanted to ask you, too, you said today... I'm wondering if what you're talking about, the cost of termination, if you terminate an agreement with a dealer, what kind of costs do you sustain today in Minnesota?
We don't terminate for cause. We've not had an issue where that's been a necessity.
But if you did, you mentioned that there would be very expensive or costly or something.
If you were to pass this law and we would be forced to buy this product back, it would be very expensive.
I assume that you approve of the language that was added
over in
the other committee today.
I believe that the bill should be started over with a fresh sheet of paper. I just think there's too much in it that causes complication.
And you know that we're dealing now with just the first 9 pages. I understand. I mean,
yes.
I understand that this would be an enormous change of how you do business.
Yes.
Senator Johnson.
Madam Chair, a couple of things I'm thinking about based on testimony. First of all, this bill has been here in Minnesota since the 80s. When I first addressed the bill, your committee counsel, Mr. Stang, said that Senator Hottinger in the 80s used to carry similar bills. Mm. We have never been able to move this forward. And Mr. Stokey talked about litigating or, you know, dealing with legislation like this once it was on the books. And I just want to touch on the other side of that issue. The legislation as it's sitting before us was crafted by Mr. Dady, who helped craft the Wisconsin legislation, and he is continually having to take care of dealers like those sitting out there because there isn't a clear contract, and they can't just, you know, pick up someone out of the phone book and come after a manufacturer if they've been wrong. They have to find the best, the guy that writes this stuff, and costs them a lot of money. So right now, they're the ones spending a lot of money on litigation, and with this, you're afraid of the reverse.
So.
That we already do in several states spend money on litigation regarding these issues.
So far not in Minnesota.
Well, not on these issues, no.
Thank you.
Senator Olson.
Madam Chair, Mr. Skokie, following up on the question about other states, do you know whether, for example, in Wisconsin, the lists of in this bill that set forth good cause are similar to the good cause reasons for termination in other states?
Mr. Stokey, I'm sorry.
Could you repeat the question?
There are 8 reasons that would constitute good cause specifically listed in this bill.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know if those reasons are similar to the good cause language or reasons in other states' laws?
I don't know specifically.
Okay. Madam Chair.
Senator Olson.
With respect to whatever the standards may be for good cause in those states, if good cause has been established by the manufacturer, then in those situations, are you required to pay back the cost of purchasing the machines or equipment?
Mr. Stokey.
It is not our policy to terminate dealers. We don't terminate dealers. That's something we don't do. But if we were compelled by that state to buy back product, we would do so.
Okay, I think it's fair enough. If you haven't had that gone through termination of dealers, then you wouldn't be able to answer that, I suppose. You know. So, Senator Olson.
Madam Chair, so in other states, in situations where you have terminated dealerships, then I'm assuming that it wasn't for good cause, and so in those situations, or if you don't have a situation where you've done it for good cause, then if it's ever been done, it must have been done for other reasons?
Dealers have elected to voluntarily terminate.
Okay.
It's difficult and expensive to put a dealer in place, and to replace that dealer is more difficult and more expensive, and we're committed to working with the dealers that we have relationships with. They may elect to disagree or decide they want to go another route, and at that point they volunteer, and under those state laws, we're compelled to buy them back.
Senator Johnson.
Madam Chair, please be specific by what you mean, elect to disagree. What are they electing to disagree to?
Mr. Stolke.
They no longer want to carry the product line.
Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Electing to disagree sounds like there's some conflict there. To me, it sounds like you're trying to dance around the termination.
I'm not trying to dance around the termination. If the dealers no longer want to do business with us, they sign a voluntary termination.
Mr. Stolke, I think probably then how about if they feel they can't sell 100 snowmobiles in a recent Minnesota winter, or if recent Minnesota winters are an example of things to come, and you say you have to, and they say we can't, is that a voluntary termination?
We don't say we have to, and that's not a voluntary termination. Okay. We create business proposals for our dealers, and they can elect to take advantage of the business proposal, or they can purchase what they'd like.
Okay. So, okay, Mr. Stolke, thank you. Yeah. And I want to add also that I think we all appreciate the fact of your presence in Minnesota and, you know, the success. And we understand you employ a lot of people, and we appreciate and respect that. So thank you.
Thank you for your time.
And who is next? Okay, yes, sir.
Good evening, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Mike Mitchell, and I work at Polaris Industries, headquartered in Medina, Minnesota. Polaris manufactures ATVs, snowmobiles, utility vehicles, and motorcycles. We employ 3,500 people, about 2,000 in the state of Minnesota. At Polaris, I spent a substantial amount of my time addressing issues relating to the dealer network in both a business and a legal capacity. I'm here today in opposition to Senate File 761. Recent years have brought tougher times for dealers and manufacturers alike. I think the testimony preceding me has kind of testified to that. The industry has suffered due to sub-average snowfall. Similarly, ATV sales have declined in recent years after many years of double-digit growth. Accordingly, we want to tell you why we oppose this legislation that will have the effect of increasing the cost of doing business for Minnesota manufacturers, will hinder the efforts of good Minnesota dealers, and ultimately will harm Minnesota consumers. Dealer relationships are vital to the power sports manufacturers. Manufacturers rely on dealers to sell our product, and we need them to succeed. Not surprisingly, all manufacturers compete hard for good dealers, and we work hard to make sure that they succeed. It may be helpful to describe how the dealer-manufacturer relationship works in the industry. Polaris enters into one-year dealer agreements. Power sports dealers do not pay a premium or a franchise fee to become a dealer. There's been reference made to other laws in the state of Minnesota. This is not a typical franchise relationship. This is not McDonald's or Arby's or Hardee's, where you have a complete devotion to one single brand, where your store has to look exactly a certain way, where you're paying an enormous upfront fee. This is a much different relationship. You have multiple manufacturers represented at the same store, the same location, by the same dealer. When working with dealers on orders, each individual dealer's circumstances are looked at, and a dealer is given options, similar to Mr. Stolke testified to, that are intended to be fair and reasonable for the dealer based on their own market and their respective inventory levels. That being said, no one can perfectly predict the markets, and thus when things that happen that affect the market, like the lack of snow this year in the Midwest or the large amount of snow in the mountains, inventory levels can be affected in a positive or a negative direction. When this happens, a variety of actions are taken by manufacturers, including adjustments to orders, shipments, and retail support. It's a normal part of the business cycle, and it is the manufacturer's problem as well. The Polaris dealer agreement gives the dealers flexibility to get out of the relationship whenever they want simply by providing notice. If they decide they want to go over to Honda, to Yamaha, they can tell us, I don't want to handle Polaris anymore. I'll give you 60 days notice and I'm gone. Polaris, on the other hand, cannot terminate the agreement during the term unless it has good cause. At the end of the one-year contract term, both parties have the flexibility to decide whether to renew the agreement. The flexibility is good for both parties as circumstances can and do change. There are definitely situations where relationships that were once good have gone bad, And despite efforts to work with the dealer, those efforts have faltered and a decision has to be made. When you have a situation like that, there's a great risk to your brand, there's a great risk to your consumers, and there's a great risk to the public generally purchasing your product, and you need to be able to act to rectify those situations. Even with this flexibility, however, the fact is that both sides usually do renew the contract and that dealers do remain dealers for many years. The reason for this is clear. Non-renewals in Minnesota are very rare because it is neither easy nor desirable to cancel a dealer. It leaves holes in the marketplace, and it's disruptive to consumers. Polaris, for example, has not non-renewed any dealers in Minnesota since 2004. Moreover, terminations of dealerships in Minnesota have been very infrequent, with most terminations resulting from dealers self-terminating rather than any action taken by Polaris. Nonetheless, there are times when non-renewal is warranted, where damage is caused by a dealer who's either unwilling to promote a brand or to serve consumers well. No matter how well-intended, Senate File 761 would radically undermine the way that manufacturers and dealers currently work together in Minnesota. Whereas now manufacturers and dealers share opportunity and risk, this bill shifts an enormous amount of the risk and cost onto the manufacturers. First, the bill is not tailored to protect only mistreated dealers. For example, the bill's mandatory inventory buyback provision that's been discussed earlier tonight turns manufacturers into insurance companies. Manufacturers must repurchase inventory whether the dealer decides to walk away on its own, I want to take Honda, buy my stuff back, or whether the dealer has committed an egregious violation, consumer fraud, disparagement of the product, or committed a felony using the dealership. In all of those situations, we're obligated to buy back the dealer. And this is one important distinction. There's a big difference between this law and Wisconsin law. In Wisconsin, if a dealer chooses to self-terminate, there is no buyback obligation by the manufacturer. That's a big distinction between this law and the law in Wisconsin. Second, since good dealers are in such high demand, laws of this nature inevitably end up protecting dealers that are marginal performers or worse. I understand we have dealers here that have good performance records with their manufacturers. The fact is that they're still dealers. And when you have a good dealer relationship, it is going to go on. You don't want to get rid of good dealers. It doesn't make financial sense to do it. It doesn't make good business sense to do it. It's very disruptive. Consumers and other dealers are harmed. Poorly performing dealers remain in the marketplace or in the network and continue to provide substandard service and poor choices for consumers. What happens, in my experience, has been with these laws is that dealers that end up seeking this protection are not the dealers that you think that would seek the protection. They end up being the dealers that are on the margin or the dealers that are worse than that, and they know that the added expense of the manufacturer having to act is enough disincentive oftentimes for them to not take action. As a result, they stay in the network, they damage the brand, that hurts the efforts of the dealers that are working hard to promote the brand, it hurts consumers who now go into a store and are not getting a fair representation of the competitive vehicles in the marketplace because one brand's being put in the back, for instance, or one brand's not being displayed at all. Third, the bill has vague language that will only increase litigation and create uncertainty. One example is the prohibition against any substantial change to the competitive circumstances of a dealer. This language is a well-known source of litigation and uncertainty where it's been employed in Wisconsin and elsewhere because it provides no guidance as to what it means, no guidance about the meaning, the scope, or the application. As a result, the manufacturer's ability to compete is hindered. Virtually any business decision could technically be a violation of the statute and could be challenged by the dealer. Similarly, in some other states, manufacturers have not been able to offer excellent incentive programs for dealers that almost all dealers wanted because certain non-performing dealers decided not to take advantage of the program and objected to the dealers that did. We understand this bill comes out of anxiety being felt by the power sports dealers and due to the current state of the industries. We feel that too. You've heard about the layoffs we've had to go through, the problem with inventory is an issue that the manufacturers have to deal with as well. But this law will not address those problems. Rather, it will create more cost and more problems for Minnesota manufacturers, Minnesota dealers, and Minnesota consumers. You've heard complaints from dealers here today. However, thoughtless terminations of good dealers simply do not happen because they do not make good business sense. For these reasons, Senate File 761 is a necessary and harmful step in regulating relationships between power sports dealers and manufacturers. Polaris Industries hopes you will look at this skeptically at this bill, and we urge you not to pass Senate File 761. Thank you for your time.
Mr. Mitchell, with all due respect, though, I think that we heard from some people who have some pretty well-established records in their communities of being good dealers. I mean, I think that if you're in business for that long, a small business to to make it that long and to grow your business and to have the volume that these gentlemen spoke of. I guess I'd call them successful, and they seem to be supporting having a little more level ground on which to deal with manufacturers. I mean, the interesting thing is, of course, that you need each other, and yet there's this friction right now, and that's what we're trying to help get a handle on and try to resolve. So I appreciate your comments.
And Madam Chair, I understand that, and I agree. What needs to be understood, though, is that dealers that are doing a good job are in very high demand. They're not the ones that are going to be targeted by dealers for termination or for something like non-renewal, because you need them in your network, especially now more than ever. You need them in your network. So it's not meant to impugn anyone's integrity, but even good relationships can go bad. And even a dealer that was performing well at some point in time with your brand can shift focus completely away from your brand. It doesn't mean they're not successful otherwise. It doesn't mean they're not a very smart and wonderful person. But we have an obligation to make sure that Polaris customers are getting treated fairly, that Polaris customers get the appropriate service, that our brand, when you walk into a dealership, is just as prominent as any other brand when you walk into a dealership. That's good for consumers. Consumers then get a chance to pick which product they want to have. So those are the kind of issues that I'm talking about. It's not meant to impugn anyone's reputation or their ability as a dealer. The fact is that you can change your focus, you can change your energy level, and those are significant changes to the manufacturer that's left out in the cold. And so that's when those kind of situations can come about.
Mr. Mitchell, are those times then, if you see something being pushed off to the side or the back or, what you know, not having equal representation in it within a dealership and less emphasis on your product, are those things that you would discuss with the dealer?
Madam Chair, absolutely. What you would do is you would work through the situation until you decided that you could no longer reach an accord. And some of the issues are going to be smaller issues that an issue of non-renewal or termination may never come up. But oftentimes, having only a certain number of vehicles on the floor is more symptomatic of an overall attitude that starts creeping into how they deal with customers, how they deal with customer service, and other issues. And so it's not one thing taken together, but generally, yes, that's what you would, in fact, do, is you'd work with your dealers to hopefully rectify that. If you can't come to an agreement on that, if a law like this is in place, it's a much, much more expensive proposition. Even though other dealers in the other area would be complaining to us saying, this dealer is damaging our reputation, this dealer is not doing a good job with customer service, it's going to be a much different cost calculus for any manufacturer when laws like this are in place.
Okay. Senator Olson?
Madam Chair, and any of the witnesses who would care to respond, I'd just like to say, and I certainly am not presuming to speak for the other committee members, but I think you can hear that we have a concern that dealers in this state are being treated differently than dealers in other states, and that we'd like our dealers to have the same level of protection, that we want them to have a reason to invest money when they put their livelihood on the line. And I have a little concern that we're getting maybe not anything that isn't accurate if you're being very careful about the words you're choosing. But, for example, if you say you're not terminating an agreement, but then you're not renewing an agreement that is only 1 year long, it has essentially the same impact on the dealer. And so I think that's we don't want to get into playing word games. We want to really get to the heart of the problem here. But on the other hand, all of that being said, I would suggest to the dealers that if you're concerned that you might end up with this bill or nothing unless you work with the dealers, that there might be some things you'd want to focus on. For example, I've just looked at the Wisconsin bill, and there are certain circumstances where you're not required to buy back. For example, in situations where there's been bad faith by the dealer there's some certain language in here. The same thing is true with car dealerships. Under our Minnesota law, there are certain circumstances where you don't have to buy back that seem reasonable to me, because it does seem to me that there should be a fair balance if a dealer is truly acting in an inappropriate way in something that's within their control, that there should be some balance there. And so I just really encourage you to try to find that balance with the dealers.
Okay. And, sir, did you?
Madam Chair.
Please introduce yourself.
And yeah. Good evening. My name is Keith Carpenter, and I'm Assistant General Counsel for Genmar Holdings, Incorporated, which is located here in Minneapolis. I appreciate the opportunity to provide Genmar's views on Senate File 761. Just so you know, Genmar is the world's largest privately held boat manufacturer in the world, with over 4,500 employees worldwide, including approximately 825 located here in Minnesota. We currently sell 13 different lines of boats, which are manufactured at 9 different manufacturing facilities across the U.S., with one of those facilities located here in Little Falls, Minnesota. Our products are sold through a worldwide distribution network of about 1,200 dealers, 32 of our dealers located here in Minnesota. Recreational boating is an immensely popular activity in America, and especially here in Minnesota. Sales of boats, however, have been flat or even decreased over the past years. As a discretionary item, boats compete directly with other recreational pastimes for our consumers' dollars. If we don't deliver the value and experience sought by the public, our consumers will go elsewhere. My primary purpose today is to explain why we believe that Senate File 761 would harm efforts to expand manufacturing employment and constrain Minnesota manufacturers and dealers who wish to expand. Senate File 761 dulls the benefits of accountability and gives dealers unreasonable protection from market factors and poor performance. It will, in effect, prop up marine dealers who provide inadequate customer service. The bill's protections will harm efforts of ambitious dealers and manufacturers to provide Minnesota boaters with an excellent customer service experience that one generally expects when purchasing an item of this value. This bill, although well-intended, I'm sure, will only increase this problem by essentially granting a dealer the rights of a franchisee without the dealer having to be accountable in a manner that a normal franchisee would be. Senator Olson hit upon a couple of issues that I think are very important, and they essentially relate to the buyback provision included in the legislation. To me, it is just inherently unreasonable to require a manufacturer to buy back inventory A when a dealer just decides to choose to go to another line. So we sign up a dealer, and 8 months later, this dealer decides to just go with a different line of boats that he feels is a premium quality. Then we have to buy his product back. It's equally unreasonable in my eyes to have to buy back inventory from a dealer who's terminated for cause. That by definition, that dealer has done something wrong. He's terminated for cause, and there should be no obligation to buy back inventory in that instance. The protections provided in this legislation are of little use to well-run dealerships, but Senate File 761 allows poorly performing dealers to hide behind such terms as substantial compliance, cause, and mandatory repurchase of old inventory. That, in a nutshell, is what is so problematic about Senate File 761. It reduces a dealer's accountability and assumes that the manufacturers do not face substantial risk in the marketplace. It is, in essence, the ultimate insurance policy for a dealer. If our retail customers are not happy with their experience with their dealer, they will go elsewhere the next time they are looking to purchase a boat, or they will leave boating completely. Do we occasionally feel the need to have to terminate or non-renew our relationship with a dealer? And we use these terms, termination, non-renewal, cancellation. They all, at the end of the day, you're correct, mean the same thing. Do we have to get rid of dealers? Do we have to ask dealers to leave our network? Absolutely. These tough decisions are, however, always based on what's happening in the marketplace. It costs us money every time we have to change a dealer, whether it's by our action or by their choice to leave us. We do not make these decisions willy-nilly, but we are running a business, and if any of our dealers is not performing satisfactorily, then we need the flexibility to make a change. We owe this to our shareholders, our employees, and most importantly, our customers. As you may or may not be aware, in 2005, the National Marine Manufacturers Association, which Genmar is a member of, in conjunction with 20 boat dealers, formed a high-profile task force to analyze these very issues. Roger Cloutier, who is the president of Genmar, was a member of the task force and helped to draft suggested language that all marine manufacturers were asked to consider incorporating into their dealer agreements. The recommendations included provisions for a rolling three-year term, exclusive territories, inventory buyback obligations in certain circumstances, succession planning, and others. Additionally, the recommendations included increased obligations on the dealers relative to customer satisfaction, facilities, market share, and the like. All of our Genmar brands have adopted what we call the three-year dealer agreement. The truth of the matter is, however, otherwise eligible dealers have decided they don't want the three-year dealer agreement, and they're going to stick with the status quo. Our dealers either like the way things are working with us as a manufacturer, or they do not want the added accountability and obligations that go along with getting those added benefits. I respectfully ask that you oppose Senate File 761. It's the right thing to do for Minnesota boaters, for well-run dealers, and for manufacturers who provide the jobs and income that is so vital to our economy. Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Carpenter, thank you. Are there any questions? Mr. Carpenter, I may have missed it. Do boat manufacturers face the same kind of issue in other states?
Yes.
You're covered with, for example, by the Wisconsin.
Yes, we're covered by the WFDL in Wisconsin. There are other states that have, to varying degrees, statutes that are similar to this. This goes a lot further than anything we've seen, especially on the inventory buyback. It also delineates cause very explicitly, while most other statutes say that these listed items are cause but aren't, you know, included but not limited to these items. You can never, you know, forecast what cause is going to be. You're always going to run into some situations that you've never seen before.
I think that Senator Olson probably, and I don't want to misinterpret what you said, so maybe I'll just ask you if you think that perhaps we should tighten up some of the buyback requirements. It seemed to me that you were making that point, that, or they're making a case for that. And I,
Madam Chair, that's correct. I guess I'm certainly supportive of the general intent of this legislation, but I think that it does need some tightening up to make it more balanced, in my opinion. I don't think under any circumstances there should be my personal opinion is there are some circumstances where the behavior of the dealer would not justify a requirement on the manufacturer to have to buy back, and that we should have a little bit of a balance in the bill under certain circumstances.
Now, members, I don't think that, Senator Olson, I don't know if you have any language to suggest.
Well, I do have some language, but this would go pretty far in the other direction. And rather than, for example, I was thinking initially that there was something left out here for that, for example, except when good cause has been established under these certain delineated circumstances and when notice has been given, I wrote as except when good cause has been established under subdivision 1 and when the reasons stated in subdivision 2 have not been cured as provided in subdivision 2, then if a dealership agreement is terminated, canceled, or discontinued, the outdoor sport equipment manufacturer shall have to buy back. But that might be too broad the other way. So I guess that would be more of a balance the other way. If it can't be done that simply, then I think it's going to require more discussion.
I think you're right.
And I am in the Judiciary Committee, so, you know, I guess if I had to vote this up or down, my personal feeling is I would vote in favor of it, but I would say to the dealers to try to get together and tighten up the language a little bit before it gets to Judiciary.
Well, it's the will of the committee, and I feel really strongly, and Senator Sparks, I'd like you to weigh in, but I feel strongly that a bill should be ready to move, but I think that that is also an appropriate discussion and decision for Judiciary. I also serve on that, you know, with you.
Right.
And we certainly, I mean, I guess it's just you and the women here tonight, Senator Sparks.
How do you like my odds, Madam Chair? Madam Chair, and I think Senator Olson brings up some good points. I know that this was kind of a bigger bill that we brought in earlier. Mm-hmm. We did reduce the size of the bill quite dramatically. I would agree with Senator Olson that some of the fraud and felony provisions probably were talked about in the House is not something that we want to pursue in this bill. And if there is some bad faith or some bad players, we certainly want to take a look at that. I would say, though, when, you know, this bill first came to me and I sat down in Austin and had coffee with three longtime dealers that have been there for a long time and voiced very similar concerns with some of the dealers here, dealers from Rochester and Austin and Albert Lee that talked about it. So it's not my intent, certainly, to hurt any Minnesota manufacturer, any manufacturer at that point, but I believe that we've seen, and Senator Johnson talked about too, this is not a new issue or something that we brought forward just because of the weather. I think that this is something that we really need to sit down and try to work towards some kind of a compromise. And I'd be willing to do that with Senator Olson if it goes to judiciary, or I'm sure it has a few more stops before this bill would move.
Senator Sparks, well, I certainly think that we have an obligation to see that this industry, in terms of manufacturers and dealers, is able to thrive in our state. I mean, I don't think any one of us here wants to have a negative impact in that direction. Is there anybody else who would like to testify? Okay, seeing none. Senator Johnson, did you?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Sparks, I asked the chair's indulgence to have the last word on this because I do have a Senate file that's identical. I guess I'd like to say to Mr. Mitchell that when you said that the dealer relationships are vital, yes, they are. The dealers want to be dealers, and we love what we do. We love our jobs, and I don't think that this legislation is going to take away the manufacturer's ability to take action against the dealers. And with this committee's will, we're going to make sure that we pass it along, you get it to judiciary, you make sure that everybody gets protected. What I want to say on the dealer's behalf, though, is corporate profits allow for corporate counsel that is sitting at that table right now, and pressures from the manufacturers on the dealers to buy and carry product is not necessarily balanced by the manufacturers refraining from setting up other dealers within a very small radius of them, nor do I think that this legislation is going to cure it. As more large volume corporate entities are allowed to sell these products, and that's outside of the contracts sometimes too, more independents are going to be put out of business. And this legislation also doesn't address, and that's why I'm thinking this is just a small step, it doesn't address one of the most infuriating issues that the dealers face, and that's the holdbacks, the infamous holdbacks. Having the last word, thank you very much, Madam Chair. I'd like to move Senate File 761.
As amended, Senator Johnson, I assume that's fine with you. Senator Sparks, Senator Johnson moves Senate File Number 761 as amended, be recommended to pass. And I know that Senator Bach would like to see it in taxes, but I think perhaps it should stop at judiciary for work along the lines of what Senator Johnson and Senator Olson have been discussing and what gentlemen here have raised. And is there any further discussion on that? Motion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The motion prevails. And
thank you.
This will go
Senator
to
Sparks,
judiciary.
Members.
I want to thank the ladies who came and stayed.
And stayed.
Senator Sparks wants to thank you, too. And we'll be back in room 112 on Thursday, members. Back in our own haunt. Yes, we are adjourned. I thought I said that. I'm sorry. Forgive me.